sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
You can have your New York City with its Frank Park Avenue. You can have your gilded mansion in Westchester. You can have your own cabana in Miami or Havana, where the blue bloods congregate for the siesta. You can have your fancy penthouse on some 42nd floor, but I'll guarantee wherever you may roam, with the tinsel and the glitter, why, those places can't compare with the humble little spot I call my home. It's a little western town called Beverly Hills, where people live a life that's free from care. No one struggles to be great. All they ask is an even break. They're satisfied to just be millionaires. Every housewife is contented with her lot, and some of them don't even own a yacht. She may have just one swimming pool, one husband to caress her. She's bored to death with foreign cars, and diamonds just depress her. She'd rather have some trinket like that oster on her dresser. In that little western town called Beverly Hills, in that little western town called Beverly Hills, you're welcome as the flowers that bloom in May. No one cares about your past or inquires about your past. If you only have one butler, that's okay. The children ring your bell on Halloween, then beat it in a chauffeured limousine. Each mother with her little son entrusted to her care will gently rock his cradle as she offers up a prayer that someday he'll be president of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In that little western town called Beverly Hills near Pasadena, that little western town called Beverly Hills.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight we have two greats for you. We begin with a wonderful episode of Suspense starring the great actress Ida Lupino. And then we go on to a fantastic episode of The Whistler from World War II. We love these old mysteries. Hope you do too. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure to try to answer your questions. Thank you so much for tuning in. Just have a phenomenal, happy weekend. And now let's enjoy our programs.
Sometimes it's hard to believe what a difference a single day can make in a man's life. Yes, or even less than that, an hour or even a minute, because fate can move in a split second. Take the case of Robert Bradley, for example. If you'd happen to wander into the Silver Dollar Buffet down on 3rd Street any afternoon prior to this September 1944, any afternoon during the racing season, you would have seen him there. A thin, pale, nervous young man with a handful of form charts and a cigarette hanging from the corner of his mouth. Yes, you would have seen Robert Bradley. You probably have forgotten him. That is, unless he owed you money, as he did most of the bookmakers in San Francisco. But at 11:44 on the night of September 6, 1944, fate turned the wheel. The steering wheel of an automobile speeding along the road which skirts the cliffs overlooking the sea, across the Golden Gate in Marin County. And in the space of a split second, Robert Bradley changed from a nobody into a somebody.
Hello.
Robert Bradley, please.
Speaking.
Sorry to disturb you, Mr. Bradley.
You ought to be. I was sound asleep.
This is Emery Todd, your Uncle Michael's lawyer. It's been a very serious accident.
What? Not Uncle Mike.
His son. Your cousin Gerald was killed about 5 hours ago when his car ran off a cliff in Marin County.
Jerry? No, you must be wrong.
I'm sorry to have to give it to you this way, Mr. Bradley. But it's essential that you appear at my office at 8 o'clock this morning. There are certain changes to be made in your uncle's will, and Gerald's death leaves you as sole heir.
Yes, if you'd seen Robert Bradley after the night of September 6th, you would have remembered him. You'd have recognized him, of course, from his picture, which appeared in the morning papers alongside that of Gerald, under the headline reading, Death of Gerald Bradley Leaves Cousin Heir to Fortune. It's a windfall, isn't it, Robert? And you can certainly use the money. But you seem rather unhappy about it there in Mr. Todd's office. Yes, you thought the world of Gerald, didn't you?
Mr. Todd, is it necessary that we do all this today? I'm hardly in the mood.
Of course. I understand how you feel, my boy. And I'm sorry. I was fond of Gerald, too. Our uncle's condition is extremely precarious.
Oh, nonsense. Uncle Michael lived to be 80.
That's precisely the point. I've just talked with Dr. Blaisdell. He gives your uncle a week.
Look, must you be so practical?
I'm afraid I must. Law is a very practical business, Robert. And you must remember we haven't much time. Now, my secretary has a few more papers here for you to sign.
Very well, Mr. Todd, let's get it over with. Good morning, Mr. Robert.
Oh, hello, Grain. I've come to see Uncle Mike.
He'll be happy to see you, sir. It's been so long, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, you haven't been a regular visitor here, sir.
Well, I will be from now on.
I might remark that it's very thoughtful of you, sir, now that Gerald's gone. It was an awful shock to the master, you know.
Yes, I know.
You'll find Miss Pritchard upstairs.
No, who's that?
The nurse, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. How do you do? I'm Robert Bradley.
Yes, Mr. Bradley.
How's Uncle Mike?
Dr. Blaisdell was here just an hour ago. It doesn't look so good, I'm afraid. The doctors can't understand what keeps him going.
And I can't understand why they told him about Gerald. They must have known it'd be too much for him.
There was some legal reason, I believe. Something about his estate.
Oh, yes, I've been through that once already. I want to see him.
I'm sorry, but Dr. Blaisdell left orders, but no way.
Don't give a hang for Dr. Blaisdell's orders. He needs me, and I'm going to see him. Uncle Mike, it's Robert. It's Robert, Bobby.
Jerry, he's gone now. There's no one now except you, Robert.
You're going to be proud of me, just like you were of Jerry. And you're going to get well, Uncle Mike. You're going to get well.
I'm not going to get well.
Listen, there's not a man in Montgomery Street who'd say Mike Bradley couldn't get anything he really wanted. Don't you see? You've got to want to live.
It's more than that.
No, it isn't. It's all in your mind. You have me, remember. And between us, we're going to live. No matter what the doctor says.
So Robert and old Michael are going to fight it out together. Yes, and it's just what Michael needs. Someone who cares about something besides that $2 million estate of his. It's not long after Robert deserts the buffet on 3rd Street for Michael's mansion in Hillsboro that the old man appears to pick up a little, to take more of an interest in life. Dr. Blaisdell is amazed.
Well, I can't understand it, Robert. I tell you, his heart's racing like a fizz.
Oh, I knew we could do it.
But what have you done?
I've just given him a little confidence, that's all. I tell you, no one can fight when he's surrounded by a flock of lawyers waiting for him to kick off.
But his heart's gone. He can't last another week.
Oh, that's what you said 3 weeks ago.
Yes, I know.
Well, maybe you're right, Doctor. But I'm going to stay with him in his house until the end. As far as he knows, well, he's getting better, understand?
Well, I must say I admire you, my boy.
Yeah.
Now, let me see. Here are a few things you ought to know, just in case the nurse off duty. Yes, here we are. Now, keep these pills handy, in case he has a critical attack.
All right.
But now, a word of warning, boy. They're extremely dangerous in excess of 3 grains. Particularly to a man in your uncle's condition. He has a violent attack during the night. Just give him 1 3-grain tablet, no more. The only thing that'll snap him out of it. More than 1 tablet is liable to carry him off.
I understand, Dr. Blaisdell. I'll see to it that everything...
Mr. Roberts, there's a Mr. Harris with the Associated Insurance Company on the telephone. Will I tell him to call back?
Yes. No, I'd better talk to him. Excuse me, Doctor.
Yeah, all right, Robert.
This is Robert Bradley speaking.
Mr. Harris, Mr. Bradley. There are a few points in your policy I think we better talk over.
Oh, I see.
Shall I come down,
No. Was it something about coverage?
Yeah. I'm afraid it's not going to protect you against all risks.
But you told me it was watertight.
Oh, something's come up since then. The company is going to need an advance on a premium.
Oh, well, perhaps I'd better come up to San Francisco. We can meet for lunch today, say, in the lobby of the St. Francis.
That's fine, Mr. Bradley.
All right, I'll meet you in an hour.
Peculiar that Robert was so disturbed about a mere insurance policy. Maybe it was because it forced him to leave his beloved Uncle Mike's side for the first time since Gerald's unfortunate accident 3 weeks ago. He drives the 25 miles into San Francisco, and an hour later strolls casually into the crowded lobby of the St. Francis Hotel. He picks up a newspaper at the stand in the lobby, seats himself on the lounge in the center of the room, and opens his paper to read. Oddly enough, he's seated back to back with another man reading a paper.
I told you never to call me down there.
It's been 3 weeks. What are you doing, hiding out on me?
Got to stay there until he kicks off, understand?
That may be too late.
What do you mean?
They're beginning to wonder.
About what?
About what Jerry Bradley was doing in Marin County the night he had an appointment in Berkeley.
Well, that's your worry.
It's gonna be yours if I get much hotter.
What are you getting at?
$25,000.
Don't be stupid. There's nothing until he kicks off, understand?
There's gotta be something. There's gotta be. I gotta get out of town, I tell you, and that takes dough.
They can't suspect. They don't know a thing.
Seen him start this way before, end up in the green room at San Quentin. Just get me the dough, that's all. But fast.
Well, Robert, so your friend, Mr. Harris, or should I say, Candy Monahan, is worried about your insurance coverage. It seems he couldn't foresee that it wouldn't cover a few suspicious minds on the homicide squad. And it didn't clear up a few questions about Jerry Bradley's death. Questions that didn't have answers. You watch the papers now very carefully, looking for a sign that the police suspected your windfall might have been brewed artificially by your friend Candy for a fee of $25,000. And you began to wish you had let matters lie instead of ingratiating yourself so thoroughly with Uncle Mike. For didn't Dr. Blaisdell himself say you were responsible for prolonging his life? You're waiting for him to die now, almost openly, because Candy can't be put off much longer, and yet he continues to linger.
Here's your tea, Uncle Mike. I'm sorry I'm late with it. I was reading the paper. Sort of forgot about the time.
Reading the paper, eh?
Anything about Gerald?
No. Oh, of course not.
I just wondered. Wish you'd bring me the paper once in a while.
You know, Dr. Blaisdell thinks you ought to concentrate on getting well. Keep it a stick to those magazines I brought you.
Wonderful what a cup of tea will do.
You're feeling better today, aren't you?
Oh, perhaps. A deal better than I did on the first day you came here, I can tell you.
Well, the doc can't understand how you've done it.
Can you?
What?
Understand how I've done it?
Well, I hope I've helped a little.
Why?
Well, what do you mean?
We may as well lay the cards on the table, Robert. You're quite aware of your position as my heir since Gerald's death. You didn't care a hang before that time. Since then, you've given up gambling and become a model nephew. Or should I say a model heir? Why?
Well, I thought you'd need me.
Nonsense. Robert, you may as well know that there's another alternative than making you sole heir.
What?
Don't jump, my boy. During the past few weeks, I've become intensely interested in a Mr. Woodford.
From Mr. Todd's office?
Mr. Todd sent him here. He's secretary of the Home for Crippled Children. A very worthy institution. Far worthier than you, I might add. Now take away the chief things and let me get some sleep, huh? After all, you're vitally interested in my constitution.
Poor Robert doesn't sleep much that night, lying there staring at the ceiling, thinking. It begins to look like the past might not be so rosy after all. That maybe at its end he'll find the little green room at San Quentin, with a very worthy charity, richer by $2 million. Something has to be done about it. Besides, the butler has just told you that the insurance man is waiting again to see you.
You fool. What are you doing here?
I had to. They were asking more questions.
Like what?
Like that whiskey bottle I put in the car. You found a guy at Fort Lauderdale who sold it to me. I'm more having a firecracker, I tell you. It's 2 days, you understand it? It's 2 days to scram.
You're going off hat-cocked.
Now tell me what I'm doing. I know, see? This might make it if I beat it now, but it's a long chance.
Listen. 5 minutes after he kicks off, I'm good for $50,000 at any bucket shop in town, but not until. Give me one more day.
You've been handing me this now for months.
I'm going one way or the other tonight.
Get this, then. If I go down, you're going with me. If I have to use this.
Put that gun away.
Just remember that. We're both going over Niagara Falls in the same barrel.
Yes, Robert, there isn't much time. It's one way or the other tonight. And this thing that looks so easy is getting pretty complicated. With Uncle Mike acting so strangely, as if he suspected the truth about Gerald. The will. You've got to find out about the will. But how? Wait a minute. That pretty girl secretary in the lawyer's office who helped you fill out the papers. You might ask her out and... Yes, that's it. But someone's on the line. You're about to hang up when you remember the extension upstairs in Michael's room.
I understand what you want. But, Mr. Bradley, we've been over the matter of your nephew before. It's all settled.
It's not all settled. I've just made my final decision.
Well, can't it wait until tomorrow?
It could, but it isn't going to. I have a feeling tomorrow may be too late.
Changing your will is a pretty important step, Mr. Bradley. Perhaps you should sleep on it.
I'm perfectly capable of handling my own affairs, Todd. I've been sleeping on it for 2 weeks.
What grounds do you have? How could you tell anything about the man in less than a month?
I've found out all I want to know. And I'm not arguing with you. I'm telling you.
Very well, Mr. Bradley. I'll be down in an hour.
There you are, Robert. Laid out for you on a silver platter. Wasn't just a hunt. Maybe Uncle Michael has seen you in the newspapers. Or maybe Green, that fishy-eyed butler. And in just 1 hour, you'll be a nobody again. Just another deadbeat with a flock of debt, trying to borrow a 2 spots to put down on the next race. Just 1 hour, Robert, unless Uncle Mike happened to die in that hour before Todd gets here. Yes. What about that? What about the little green room at San Quentin? Remember what Candy said about both of you going over Niagara in the same barrel? Yes. Uncle Mike must die, but how? Sit down, Robert. Sit down and think this one out clearly. Can't be any slips this time. Wait a minute. Those pills. That's it. The nurse is gone for the night. Just time for his tea, too. Couldn't be better. Where are the pills?
Oh, yes.
In the medicine cabinet. In the bathroom.
Uncle Mike, what are you doing out of bed?
I didn't want to bother you.
Bother me? Well, that's what I'm here for.
Just wanted to drink.
Dr. Blazer would raise the roof. Here, let me help you.
I am a little weak, a little dizzy tonight.
Well, it serves you right, getting out of bed that way. There you are.
Thanks.
Now, how about some tea?
I don't know.
You just want to be told. Now, don't go away. I'll have for you 10 minutes.
So Robert goes downstairs to make the tea, stopping first to get the little box of pills out of the medicine chest in the bathroom. Now for the teacup. How many, Robert? The doctor says that one might be fatal. 2 ought to do it. Better make sure. Put in 3. That's 9 grains. The tea is stronger than usual tonight, so he won't taste it. And don't quite fill his teacup, so he'll be sure to drink it all. There. Now, back up to the bedroom. You still have 40 minutes to go, and there's plenty of time. 9 grains shouldn't take long, should they?
Here you are, Uncle Mike. Right out of the cat. I'll set the tray here. Nothing like a hot cup of tea. Bet you sleep like a baby. Maybe you'd better sit up, huh? Here, let me fix the pillow. Say, you can't go to sleep on me like that. That's what tea's for. Come on, I'll give you a hand. Uncle Mike. He's dead.
Couldn't be better. Almost too good to be true. Yes, almost as if he did it on purpose, just to tease you. Driving you almost frantic and then quietly dying all by himself at the very last minute. That was a windfall too, wasn't it, Robert? Now you hurry. Throw that cup of tea down the wash basin. Rinse out the cup and put it back so if the nurse told you bring it up, it'll be there. Then call Dr. Blaisdell quickly. Everyone must be here to see it. And to see that he did it by himself. It only takes the doctor a few minutes to get here and look at Uncle Mike.
Yes, come at last. Did he cry out or anything?
Well, I didn't hear a thing, Doctor. I just came in to bring him some tea a few minutes ago and found him lying there quietly, but he'd fallen asleep.
Yes, that's just about what he did. I guess it's just as well.
Yeah.
He'll never know now about Gerald.
What do you mean?
You've seen tonight's papers?
No.
Gerald didn't die by accident, Robert. He was murdered.
What are you talking about?
Well, he was murdered in San Francisco by a man by the name of Monahan.
But I thought, Marvin County.
Yes, so did I.
Monahan drove him there and pushed his car over the cliff.
This Monahan, he's, confessed?
Didn't get a chance to. He chose to shoot it out with the police in the San Francisco Hotel.
Oh, I see.
And that's all there is to it, Robert. Another windfall. You can't lose now. No one left to give it away, no loose ends. You can rest easy now.
It was a close call, but there's nothing to worry about. Or is there? Next morning, as you're about to go out.
Robert Bradley?
Yes.
I'm from headquarters. This gentleman, I think you know.
Oh, yes. Hello, Dr. Blaisdell.
Good morning, Robert.
I think you'd better come along with us.
What for? I don't understand.
You're under arrest on suspicion of murder.
But...
there's no use denying it now, Robert. You see, I'm the one who found the evidence.
Evidence? Oh, I don't understand. How could you? I
realized right away that your uncle had died from the effect of poison. I wondered if it might have been the tea you brought it. The cup had been washed clean, but a few drops had spilled on the saucer. Just a few drops you didn't notice, but it was enough. When analyzed, it showed the presence of the drug.
But he didn't drink the tea.
He died of the poison. And when I looked for the pills I gave you, I found that six of them were missing. You didn't have to use six. Three would have been enough.
But I didn't. I only put in three. I saw him earlier in the bathroom. Must have taken the other three himself. That's what killed him. He didn't drink the tea. He didn't. I didn't kill him. I was. I intended. But he was already dead.
I doubt if the jury will believe that. Come on, son, let's go.
And so the little green room at San Quentin lay at the end of the path after all. Robert found lots of time to think during the next few months. To think about what might have happened if he hadn't decided to brew that cup of tea for Uncle Mike. He was a pretty good prisoner, almost to the last, when he heard something that started him talking to himself, staring wild-eyed at the warden who brought his food, shrieking out in the middle of the night. He discovered, you see, that Uncle Mike had disinherited him on the third day after Gerald's death, that those few weeks of kindness had finally changed his mind, and that he had called Mr. Todd on the night he died to reinstate Robert as his only heir.
Valley 103.1. Valley 103.1.
And now with The Bullet and the performance of our star, Miss Ida Lupino as Ruth Martin, with Elliot Lewis as her husband, Harry.
Ruth? Turn around, Ruth.
No.
Turn around, Ruth. I've got the gun in my hand.
Please, Harry. Please.
I'm pressing the trigger. Will it be this time?
Harry, don't. Don't do this to me.
Will it be this time, Ruth? Will it be this time?
Yes, Harry. Yes, this time. This time I'd die, and it was like drowning. Going down for the last time. Everything flooding through my mind. How step by step we'd come to this point. Neither one of us wanting to. From the day Harry came back from prison, meeting me in the station. Pale, haggard. In a suit two sizes too big, nothing left but his stupid pride. And me. Well, I suppose I was quite a shock to Harry. He looked at me so strangely all the way as we walked back to the parking lot for the car.
What'd you do to yourself? You're so changed.
For the better, I hope.
Just changed.
Now, is that being gallant?
Gallant?
When I came out of the kitchen to take over the business, Harry, while you were away, I had to change from my apron.
Had to dye your hair, too. Had to become a real glamour girl, huh? And that dress, is that one of ours? How's the business going? You hardly mentioned it in your letters, holding its own.
Better than that. Just about tripled our volume since you went away. Well, here we are.
What?
The car. Here's the car.
This chromium wonder?
Sure, it's yours. Here's the key. Go on. We can afford it.
Little lady really took over. Where's the starter?
Right there.
Hmm.
Oh, Harry, somebody had to take over when you went away. After all, dress styles are changing all the time. Don't have a chip on your shoulder.
Another thing, what's this when you went away routine? Like maybe I went to China. I took a chance in my business and I lost, so they dumped me into the hoosegow for 3 years. I'm not ashamed of it, so don't you...
You're going the wrong way, Harry.
Well, I guess I know the way to my own house.
But we live in a new house. Something really special.
What goes on here?
What's wrong with you? I did the best I could to keep things going. There's nothing to be jealous of.
Jealous?
Oh, Harry, why are we fighting?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got nothing to fight about. I'm back in the business, and you can go back to taking care of the house, cooking.
No, I...
Keeping things looking nice?
No, Harry, I...
Letting your hair get back to the color it used to be.
I can't do it.
Well, we'll see, baby.
Look, I don't want to be the boss.
Thanks.
But I can be of help to you.
Sure, have a nice hot dinner waiting for me when I come home from work.
We can afford a cook for that now.
Cook? You're all the cook we need.
Harry, I'm not the same anymore. I just can't sit home and wait for you to come and tell me what the world's all about.
Then you're going to have to learn, baby. You're just going to have to learn.
But nothing worked out the way Harry planned it. He found he couldn't keep me home. He put me in a corner in the office. Set out to prove he didn't need me at all. Only 3 years is a long time to be away from anything. We're new buyers. The buyers didn't know him. They knew me.
No, this is not what I wanted, Mr. Martin.
Well, then I'll show you something else. Got plenty of time.
Can't really say that I have. Didn't I see Mrs. Martin in your office when I came in today?
Well, she's just getting things in order before she retires back to the kitchen.
She always knows exactly what I want. Could you send for her, please?
But I'm sure I can show
you. Would you mind?
No. No, I wouldn't mind.
One blow after another at his stupid pride. Most of the workers had never known Harry. They were used to taking their orders from me. But he had to show them he was still the big shot.
Stop that machine.
Huh? Oh, yes, sir.
I want these coats cut with a flare 3 inches longer.
Oh, but Mrs. Martin...
Don't tell me what Mrs. Martin worked out. That sign out on the front window says Harry Martin.
Oh, yes, sir, but...
But nothing. Cut it the way I told you.
But these new machines Mrs. Martin installed, they don't operate like that.
What?
That's why we changed over.
I see.
So, shall I do it like Mrs. Martin said, sir?
Yeah, just like Mrs. Martin said.
It got so we were like two strangers. Harry wouldn't even look at me anymore. I think he actually began to hate me. And then the final thing. He began finding out about George. Oh, listen, I'm no angel, but 3 years. I'm not trying to defend myself. It's just that it's terrible to be lonely. And George came along and treated me like I was somebody to respect, somebody with dignity. Well, then I began to realize that when I took the car someplace, Harry's car would bob up behind me, follow for a few blocks, then disappear. I'd be shopping in a store. Suddenly, Harry's face would begin to weave in and out of the crowd, then disappear. Or coming into the office one day and finding Harry had put an extension on my phone. I was being stifled. I couldn't breathe anymore. I didn't dare see George anymore. I hardly dared phone him. So it's like prohibition of any kind. It began to be important. George had never really meant very much to me, but now I started thinking he was the only thing I had to hang on to. And Harry, always playing little jokes, setting his little traps. Like the morning he left for the office early. Some business to take care of. And hearing his car back out of the garage, move down the street, thinking I was free for a few minutes. Free to call George after all these days.
Hello?
George?
What? Ruth, darling, where have you been? Why haven't I heard from you?
Oh, George, I wanted to call...
George who? George who? What's the full name, baby?
I heard you leave.
Had the gardener take the car to the gas station. Dial George again, baby. Finish the conversation.
Listen, you're driving me crazy with these tricks. What's wrong with you?
Here's the phone. Dial him again.
Dial who?
Who are you talking to?
The Beaver Knitting Mill. George Baker. He's one of their salesmen.
Why did you hang up so quick?
You startled me. What are you doing?
Of course, 3 years is a long time. But 3 years ago, the Beaver Knitting Mill never opened before 9.
Harry,
You must have dialed wrong, baby. There's no answer.
Sneaking around behind my back. Spying on me. Checking on my phone calls. Harry, I'm not going on this way. I'm not going to let you drive me crazy.
What do you think you're going to do about it?
I want a divorce.
You mean that?
Yes.
You must be quite a guy.
Listen to
me. No. You listen, lady. Okay, it's a deal. You'll get your divorce, but on my terms, lady. All the way down the line.
What kind of terms?
I know all about the laws in the state. 50-50 on everything. But it's not going to be that way with us. You give me a release, giving me the whole business, and you're free as the air.
Give you the business? But I built the business. There was nothing left when you went to prison.
That's my deal, kiddo.
My whole life is tied up with that business. I worked.
That's the deal.
Why are you doing it, Harry?
Because whoever this bum is...
There's no one.
Whoever he is. I got a hunch when he hears you're not bringing half the business as a dowry, his great love is just going to shrivel up and die.
That's what you believe, is it?
Exactly.
All right, Harry. You draw up the papers.
Ruth, I just don't know what to say.
But to be free. Free to be with you, darling.
Oh, what kind of freedom is it when you have to grub for a buck? That kind of freedom you can feed to the pigeons.
George, don't talk like that.
We're not a couple of 19-year-old kids running off on a motorcycle. If you give up your business, how are we supposed to live?
That's the only way he'll let me go.
Then don't go.
He was right. What he said about you was right.
If he said I didn't care for you very, very much, then he was wrong. But if he said I like it nice with enough money coming in to make it comfy, and how he was right.
Shut up!
What was that for? Because I'm honest with you? Aren't you even going to say goodbye?
No, I can't say goodbye. Not now. I can't be alone. I've got to have somebody.
Well, it isn't me, baby. Never was. Oh, baby.
Will I see you tonight?
No,
Will you call me? I feel lost. I'll be at the office tonight. I'll be there alone waiting for your call. George, will you call me?
All right, Ruth. Be there at 10. I'll call you.
He wasn't that important to me. I wanted affection and love from somebody so much. George would be calling at the office at 10 o'clock. It seemed that's all there was for me. I walked. I sat in the park. I waited. A telephone call from George. When I got to the building, I looked up at our windows. Dark. Not a light on the whole floor. When I got to the outer door of the office, I stopped and listened. Not a sound. I went inside. Found the light switch.
Oh, I've been waiting for you, Ruth.
Where have you been?
Harry, why were you waiting here in the dark?
I tried to take a snooze, just stretched out here for a minute. I haven't been sleeping much lately.
Yes, I know.
You neither, have you?
No, not much.
I have the paper. I left it here on your desk.
Paper?
Yeah, it's all very legal. You relinquish all claims to the business, then I bow out of your life.
No.
These lawyers, they can find word. What'd you say?
I've changed my mind. I'm not going to sign it.
It's the only way I'll give you a divorce.
Then we'll just have to forget about the divorce.
I want you to sign this paper, Ruth.
I won't, Harry. And I don't want to argue about it.
Wait.
Yes?
I know who he is, baby.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about George Groves.
Groves? George Groves?
You've been giving him money.
That's a lie.
I found this deposit slip weeks ago in your writing made out to his bank account, $300.
Lies.
And this deposit slip, $200. And this one, $250. Who is he? You're not getting out of here until you tell me who he is.
Harry, I wanted to tell you, but I just couldn't.
Who is he?
He's a gambler.
Gambler? Who are you kidding?
You asked me, so I told you. Now I'm going.
Wait, that doesn't make sense. You never gambled?
Well, I was like a lost dog. Nothing to do, no one to turn to. I lost that money and quite a bit more.
Ruth, if that were true...
It is true.
There isn't any other man.
There never was. 10 o'clock.
George Grove's a gambler. Here, you shouldn't keep these things lying around, baby.
I've got to go, Harry.
Ruth, since I got off that train a month ago, I've been acting like I don't know what. You think we've got any chance to start all over again? Right from the beginning, baby?
I don't know, Harry. I can't think straight. Let's go someplace. Let's not talk about it here.
No, you're right. Here's where all the trouble started. Let's get out in the air.
Yes, come on.
Sure. A gambler. I bet he really took you to the cleaners. Well, you know something? I'm not sore at him. Not a bit. Oh, wait. Let me turn out the light.
Well, hurry.
Okay. Now let's... your phone.
I don't understand.
Who'll be calling at this hour?
Nobody. Must be a wrong number. Come on.
Well, what do you mean, come on? At least answer it. Oh, never mind. I'll take it.
No, I...
What?
Well, it's on my line.
Then you answer it.
Why are you going to your extension?
Answer the phone, Ruth.
You're starting it all over again.
I said answer the phone. Answer the phone. Ruth, answer the phone. You almost had me believing your fairy tale. You almost made it.
Harry, listen to
me. All I want you to do is sign this release and clear out.
No.
You heard what I said, Ruth.
I'll never sign it.
Okay. One last trick, baby. Look what I got in this drawer. I asked you to look.
Harry, put away that gun.
I want you to get a good look at it. Called a war souvenir. Only if you don't sign this release, you know what, baby? Someday I'm going to kill you with this gun.
No,
someday
no.
I'm going to say to you, Ruthie, I'll give you 3 seconds to sign this release. One.
Harry.
Two.
Don't, Harry.
Three.
No.
What's the matter, Ruth?
You try to kill me.
Don't be silly. I told you it was a trick. The gun's harmless. It's unloaded, see?
Why did you do that to me? Why?
Yeah.
Put it away.
Isn't that strange? You know it's not loaded and you're still afraid.
Put it away.
That's the beauty of the trick, Ruth. That's why someday you're going to break down and sign that release. You see, you'll never know just when it will be loaded. You'll never know, Ruth.
Threatening to kill you.
Yes, he has a gun. George, I'm coming to you. You've got
no.
to... But
I... He follows you here and kills the both of us. Does that make everything just dandy? Look, Ruth, do me a favor, will you? Kind of forget this address from now on.
But George, don't say
I'm
that.
I'm sorry.
But you've got to help me. What can I do?
You can go to the police.
Police?
You know, threatening somebody's life is slightly illegal.
Yes. Yes, the police. Yes, of course, they'll help me. Oh, yes, George, that's very smart of you. They'll help me. I went to the police, told them what Harry was trying to do. They instructed one of their men to go with me and investigate. When we reached the lobby of the office building, I couldn't go on. I was afraid to face Harry when the policeman would find the gun.
What's the matter, Mrs. Martin?
Well, I think I better wait down here.
You don't need to be afraid. Come on.
Please. It's on the 3rd floor, officer. You see the name on the reception door the minute you get off the elevator. Please, do you mind?
You're really scared, aren't you? All right. I'll be down soon enough.
I began to feel a sense of relief. Harry wouldn't terrorize me any longer. Soon the officer would bring him down. He'd be off to police headquarters, and then I'd swear out a complaint. The time he got out of jail, I would have started proceedings of my own to divorce him. And then I started to cry at that. I don't know why, just standing there and waiting. And then I began to wonder what they were doing up there so long. More than a half hour had gone by. When the elevator door opened, I expected to see Harry being pushed along, handcuffed. The officer was all by himself. He was smiling.
Well, now, I just had a nice chat with your husband. You've been worrying for nothing, Mrs. Martin.
But the gun...
Oh, sure, I saw the gun. It's just a war souvenir. It's not even loaded. He doesn't have ammunition for
it. But someday it will be loaded. Someday he's going to kill me. He said that.
Kill you? Why, he's in love with you. Crazy about you. Now, he feels pretty bad about this. He did it just as a, you know, just as a funny
I tell you...
He says if you're going to go and get scared, he'll never do it again.
But listen to
me. Now, look, why don't you go on upstairs? He wants to apologize for scaring you like this. He's a very nice guy.
I tell you, he's going to kill me. I'm not...
You're just upset. Like he said, you've been working too hard. You ought to rest up.
I don't care what you think. I want him arrested for threatening me with a deadly weapon.
An empty gun. That's not a deadly weapon.
Now, listen to me.
No, you listen to me. Even if I wanted to, there's nothing I could do. As long as that gun is empty, it's not a deadly weapon, and we can't touch him. In this state, that's the law, Mrs. Martin. Go ask a lawyer about it. Anybody who knows the law knows that.
That's that, I'm afraid. If we could actually prove, Mrs. Martin, that your husband wanted to kill you, then you could put him away for years.
For years?
That's right. But he can't hurt you with an empty gun. And as long as that gun is empty, we can't touch him. In this state, that's the law.
So there was nothing I could do. Nothing. Until there was a bullet in the gun, I could do nothing to it. Then the answer came to me. It was so simple. So obvious all the time. What would happen if I put the bullet in the gun? It was late Saturday afternoon. The offices were closed. I went to the desk where he kept the gun. I found the caliber marked alongside the barrel, 31.6. Put the gun back, closed the drawer. My heart was pounding. I kept saying it all the way to the gun shop. 31.6, 31.6, 31.6.
That must be a foreign make. Don't have any bullets of that caliber.
Well, do you know any place that does carry them?
No, not unless you wrote to maybe one of the big outfits back east.
But that would take so long.
Of course, a .32 shell would work just as well if you weren't so fussy.
No, that'd be fine. I'm not at all fussy. I went back to the office, took out his gun, broke it open. And I opened my purse, took the bullets out. Years in prison, that's what the lawyer said. Well, it'd serve him right after what he'd made me go through. I forced the bullets inside the gun and closed it. Now it was a deadly weapon. Put the gun back in the drawer. I went to my desk to call the police. Now they'd see the gun for themselves. Now they'd see Harry planned to kill me. Years in prison, yes, that's what I wanted them to get.
Police headquarters.
This is Mrs. Martin. My husband has just threatened me with a loaded gun, and I...
Just a moment, Mrs. Martin. Now I'll connect you with Sergeant Lewis.
Harry!
Calling George, Ruth?
You think you're so clever, don't you?
No, I'm not very clever. Thought I'd take a ride in the country. Thought it would relax me. Nothing seems to relax me. Everything going to pot around here.
I'll be going.
Still not interested in this release, huh?
I've told you a million times.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see you later.
What's your rush? You're not interested in the release, then maybe you might be interested in this souvenir.
Harry.
Turn around and look at it, Ruth. Part of the little trick, you know.
No.
I said, turn around.
Oh.
Isn't it remarkable? Even after all this time, it still fills you with terror.
Put the gun down, Harry.
Someday, it's going to be like I always said.
Don't start that again.
Someday, I'm going to say, Ruth, I'll give you 3 seconds to sign that release. One.
No.
Two.
No.
Three.
No, don't shoot. I'll sign it. I'll sign it.
All right, go on.
Put the gun down on the desk.
First, sign it, Ruth. Here's the pen. Sign it.
All right, all right. There. Now, please put down the gun.
Yeah, all right. So, I finally wore you down.
Now, I've got the gun.
What do you think you're going to do with it?
There's something you don't know, Harry, that should interest you very much. This gun isn't empty anymore.
What?
No, it's loaded.
So that's what you were doing in the sporting goods shop.
You followed me everywhere, haven't you?
Yeah. I was in luck.
The gun is loaded, Harry. So give me back the paper.
Sorry, Ruth. Not this.
Harry, if you don't give me back the release, I'm going to count three. Just like you, remember? And then I'm going to pull the trigger. Only this time it won't just click. So give me back the paper. All right. One. I tell you, there are bullets in this gun.
I may have it, Ruth.
Give me the paper.
Give me the gun, Ruth.
I mean it, Harry. I'll kill you.
Ruth. Ruth.
I can't. I can't hurt you anymore. I can't.
Here, stop the crying. Ruthie, baby. If you want the guy, you can have him. And your share of the business, too. The whole works if you want.
I never wanted anyone but you, Harry.
I must have been crazy to things I've been doing. Like a crazy dream, like it wasn't really me. Could you ever understand what went on inside me? Could you try to understand? Do you think you could, Ruth?
Yes, I could try.
Baby, baby. Hey, do you hear what I said? Don't cry. Please, don't cry.
Oh, let me, Harry. Please let me.
It seems that every housewife has a weakness. Now, some just can't make good biscuits. Others can't iron their husband's shirts properly. But Gracie has the worst weakness of all. She can't say no to a house-to-house salesman. Whatever he has to sell, Gracie will buy it. Now, a typical day after George has gone to the office runs something like this. First comes a magazine salesman.
Yes?
How do you do, madam? Is your husband a sport lover?
Well, yes and no. He's a pretty good sport, but he's not much of a...
I mean, does he hunt and fish?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Good. I'm selling Field and Stream.
Well, we wouldn't have room for a field, but I'll take a stream.
Field and Stream is a magazine.
Oh, well, I'm sure my husband will like that. I'll take a 20-year subscription.
Is that your husband's picture on the piano?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I suggest you give him a 1-year subscription and renew it if necessary.
Next comes a salesman from a nursery.
How do you do? I'm selling flowers and shrubs.
Oh, well, I can't be fooled twice. I'll take a 1-year subscription.
But, madam, I'm from a nursery.
Oh, a nursery.
Yes.
Well, I'll take one baby boy and one baby girl.
Next comes a man selling insect spray.
Yes?
Good morning, madam. Do you have Japanese beetles, aphids, termites, or silverfish?
Well, no, I don't. I'll take a dozen of each.
Yes, anyone who comes to Gracie's door finds a willing buyer. In fact, one day...
How do you do?
Well, how do you do?
I'm making a house-to-house canvas.
Well, if it's a nice, heavy canvas, I'll buy it.
The canvas is for the Gallup pool.
All right. I'll take one pole for the backyard and one for the front.
Poor Gracie. She just cannot say no. George has tried his best to correct her weakness.
Gracie, I want you to learn how to say no to salesmen. Whatever they say, you answer no.
Mm-hmm. All right, then.
Let's see you say it.
No.
Try it again.
No.
Now, the next time a salesman comes to the door, that's the only word I want you to speak.
No.
Right.
Good day, madam. Have you a concert grand piano?
No.
Would one be too expensive for you?
No.
Do you think your husband would object if you bought one?
No.
Well, splendid. I see you're both music lovers. Would one piano be enough?
No.
Ah, you'll take one apiece. Excellent. Will tomorrow be soon enough for delivery?
No.
This afternoon, then. Would you like the easy credit terms?
No.
That'll be COD $4,000. Good day.
Get out those old records, those old phonographs.
phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. What if they sound scratchy? The tunes really were catchy, and especially those that said, I love you so. I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day. To get you courtable, I'd bring my portable and melt your heart away with all those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. Those old
all the ones about
records, those old
all the ones about
records, the ones
Kitten
we used to play so long ago,
on the old wind-up Victrola. Barney Google was great.
The tunes
all the songs
really
about Kate,
and especially
jada,
those
jada,
that
boom,
said I love
boom,
you so.
Yucca, hula, hickey,
I used
hula,
to beg
honey,
you over and over just
and
to
sunny,
set the wedding day.
Meet me on
to
the
get
back
you portable,
songs,
I'd bring my
torch
portable
songs,
and melt your heart away with all those old.
They were wonderful
records. Those old
play them over again.
Records, the ones we used to play so long ago. The ones we used to play so long ago.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.